Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Tom Perrin on one side of the screen, Jerry Remy on the other side. Getting closer to reuniting in person. Jerry, how are you?
They're doing good. Everything's fine. You know, we get spring training's inching away. They had their off day, and now it's kind of the final push down there. So it does feel very strange. I notice the more it goes on, the more out of touch you feel when you're not down there, you know, and that's it's kind of weird because, you know, I like to go down there, sit in the dugout in the morning, watch batting practice, watch them take ground balls, do their infield drills, do all that stuff. And you kind of get a feel for guys when you watch that. And basically you're sitting here and you're just, you know, reading scores of games and reading stories. And, you know, it's hard really to get a feel for anything when you're back here. I find it more strange as time goes on.
One thing I've noticed is that having gone down there, and I'm usually down there at the beginning before the games and into the beginning of the games. But and when you're down there, spring training seems to last forever.
Oh yeah.
Like you wake up and it's another day and it's Groundhog Day, day after day. When you're up here, to me, it's flying by. Like all of a sudden you said, I mean, 3 weeks from Thursday, we've got the opener for the Boston Red Sox, Major League Baseball game. And it feels to me like they just got to camp the other day.
Yeah, spring training always feels that way. You know, you go through this excitement as a player to get down there. You can't wait to get down there. Everybody wants to get there early. Then after you've been there for about 2 weeks, it's like, let's go. You know, let's play games. So you start to play the games, and after about 2 weeks of that, you get sick of those, and you want to start the real season. So that's been going on in baseball for a long, long time, and they keep expanding spring training. It gets longer and longer and longer, and they keep inviting more people there. So it's you're right. When you're down there, it's like it's never going to end, you know. And then back here, it's like, you know, you check the score, you read the stories, and you go from there. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the season starting. I certainly am. I honestly don't have a better read on this team right now than I did 2 weeks ago, to be quite honest with you, because I haven't been down there myself to, you know, put eyeballs on it.
You know, you kind of sift through it, right? And we all know it's about the pitching. I think, you know, they've hit – I mean, they're leading – Florida and Arizona in offense, most home runs, high slugging percentage, all that. And, you know, we forget that this was a good hitting team last year. I think people forget that. They led the league in batting average, and they were third in on-base and slugging percentage. So the offense wasn't the problem. You got to pitch better. And so we're keeping a close eye on these starters. Nick Pivetta went today, his second outing, three innings and just one earned run. I'm telling you right now, I want to be on the record. He's my pick to click. I think this is a huge breakthrough year. I had a long conversation with him the other day. We've been doing these Zoom things, and we're going to have my stories coming out later in the summer. And I had a long talk with him, and this guy's interesting. You know, he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, throws hard, has good stuff, kind of fell out in Philadelphia, and they moved him back down to AAA, and then they brought him up and went to the bullpen. And I think he felt the team lost confidence in him, and that's not an excuse. You know, he didn't perform, so he brought it on himself.
Right.
But I think there's a feeling that a new team, you know, he and Dave Bush have kind of gotten together and talked about a lot of things. Guy's got velocity, and he's got some good secondary stuff. This guy could be a find.
Well, let's hope so. And you know, you're right about changing teams. You know, sometimes you get in a rut with the same organization, and they expect to see – the same things over and over and over again without being able to correct them. And then you get to a new organization, all of a sudden you've got, you know, a lot of new people looking at you with different ideas. And you welcome that as a player. You know, you want some new ideas because the ideas you've been using haven't been working. And you get a feeling that the organization is giving up on you. You know, it's hard to go to work every day like that. It really is. And so when you get to a new organization, you get new people watching you, suggesting things. You're willing to try anything to get yourself better. And you're right about the chip on the shoulder, because anytime you're let go or traded or whatever from, you know, waived or, you know, gone as a free agent from one organization, you want to stick it to that organization a little bit, you know, so your motivation level is a little bit higher. Yeah. But I think the key here with Pivetta, and, you know, as you mentioned, he's got good stuff, and, you know, they couldn't find a home for him, whether it be in the rotation or the bullpen. And now he feels like he's got a legitimate shot to be a starting pitcher, you know, on a good ball club. And that's what he wants to be. So I'm sure he's absorbing all this information, working very hard, and has to feel very optimistic about being with an organization that wants him. Remember, the Red Sox wanted him. They went after him. So, you know, that makes a big difference in the mind of a player and the mindset of a player, you know, when you go into a new spring training or even in the middle of the season when you get traded. You know, it's all about that. It's all about feeling welcome, wanted, and then, you know, have people help you.
Five innings, two earned runs in his two Grapefruit League starts. I know that numbers don't really mean anything in spring training. Do they mean more for a pitcher, because you only, especially a starting guy, because you might only get, what are they going to get, six opportunities, give or take? Do results matter at spring training for a starting pitcher?
I think they do. You know, I think they do more than position players, obviously, because a position player can get hot the last week of spring training and be set to go. And, you know, you can struggle through 5 weeks of spring training games, and all of a sudden the last week you get hot and you feel good about yourself going into the season. It's a little bit different. You know, we were talking earlier about Garrett Richards, you know, off to a tough start this season, you know, in the first couple of starts that he's had. He's been all over the place with his control. His mechanics are all out of whack. He's doing, you know, crazy things right now. And that's not a good feeling to have, especially when you're battling for a place in the starting rotation. And there's no guarantee he's going to be in it. He's going to prove himself. He's going to, you know, prove that he is capable of being in the starting rotation, which is kind of nice to say, because that means they got about three or four guys that they feel very confident about. So, you know, he's going to have to get his act together pretty soon. And, you know, I saw a little bit of the game that he pitched last time, and he was all over the place with everything. I mean, his mechanics, his head was flying one way, his arm was going another way, his legs going another way. So they got a lot to work on with him, I think, you know, right now. And he desperately needs a good outing. I don't care if it's spring training or not. You know, you hope to have a good one your first time out, your second time out, every single time out. But he really needs one now to get him, you know, back in the positive frame of mind.
Guy's a veteran, but it has not gone well. Four innings, six earned runs, but he's walked four.
Yeah.
Right? It's the command. He hasn't had any command and control. Let's hear what he had to say after Sunday when he got hit around pretty good up in Northport against Atlanta. Here's what Garrett Richards said.
Obviously, you know, the results aren't where we want it to be, but, you know, worked out of some jams today. You know, had some weak contact that ended up falling. Had some first pitch hits that I gave up. You know, that's baseball. But, I'm healthy, moving in the right direction. Continuing to get my timing with my lower half and my upper half kind of synced up. That's been kind of the issue so far. And then worrying about my front side not clearing out too early. So it's just all mechanical stuff right now.
Garrett, is it fair to say you haven't really been comfortable so far in the two starts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it's spring training and you're working on stuff. I'm just trying to feel some familiar things, just working through it.
You know, I was talking to Dennis Eckersley, Jerry. It was always great to talk about pitching, obviously. And he said, you know, watching Richards Sunday especially, but these two Grapefruit League starts, he said the upper body's completely out of whack with the lower body. He said he's just a mess. You can see that the arm slot is changing all the time from pitch to pitch, inning to inning. And maybe that's a good thing in a way, right? Because those are correctable things. It's not like he's pitching at his best and getting hit around. He seems completely out of whack right now, and that'll be the test to get him back in sync.
Well, that'll be the big test because, you know, that can get – you can get carried away and stuff like that. I mean, it could become habits for you. And, you know, if you go the whole spring throwing like he's throwing right now, I mean, nobody's going to have confidence in you, and he knows that. He's not going to have confidence in himself. So it's going to straighten out very quickly. I'd say in his next start, because, you know, you're getting down there right now. And, you know, he's going to get this mechanics thing all together worked out and have some positive results for himself and for the people that are watching him down there, evaluating him on whether he is going to be a starting pitcher or not. Because you put three of those back to back to back, you know, you're looking at maybe two more starts and then the season starts. And how do you feel about that? You can't feel very good about that. You know, and as a fan, you can't feel very good about that as a player. And as certainly as a manager or pitching coach, you can't feel good about it, or an organization. So, you know, I think he desperately needs a good outing next time out, whenever that may be. Hopefully it's this weekend when we have games and we get a chance to see him again. But, you know, I think for his own benefit, You know, he's got to have a clean outing. He needs a clean outing really, really bad. And sometimes you get caught up in, you know, there's so much information coming your way trying to lift you out of these problems that, you know, you've got to be able to separate what works for me. Okay, you know, is what he's telling me now, is this something I got to, you know, focus? Is this focus number one? What's focus number two? Focus number three? You put it all together, you're a mess. You're a total mess. You know, it's like everybody's telling you how to pitch. And then, you know, so you got to compartmentalize, whatever that word is. You got to do that. And you got to be able to, you know, take one step at a time with this stuff and try to get it all together.
You ever go through, I mean, I know you went through it as a hitter, every hitter does, but when you go in a slump, you know, everyone's got something, right? Everyone's got an opinion. It's your toe tap, it's your back load, it's your hips, it's your this. Do you remember as a hitter ever like trying, like getting so far that you've tried something and now you're like, this isn't me. I got to get back to who I was.
No, because I always had a great hitting coach with the Red Sox and Walt Reniak. And it was always get back to the basics. You know, what do you do to be successful? And what are you not doing now? So what we would do is when things were out of whack for me, we wouldn't pinpoint a certain area, but like your hands or you're overstriding or you're doing this. Or we would go back to what the basic fundamentals and do it with underhand flips in the cage and just take your best swings all the time and repeat and do it over and over and over again. And eventually that carries into a game. But you're right about other people. Everybody's got an idea of what you're doing wrong. You know, and when you start listening to that, you're a beaten man. You really are, because half these guys don't know, you know, what your style is of hitting. They really don't know. They know themselves, but they don't know what your style is. So they can, you know, that can beat you down. So you got to be able to avoid that. Have trust and confidence in your coach. You know, as we're talking about Richards, have trust and confidence in Bush. Listen to him, see what he's got to say, how we're going to line this up and what we're going to do next, and go from there.
Which makes me think automatically of JD Martinez, right? Because he doesn't need anybody giving him action. He's got all the different ideas, right? I mean, this is a guy who's a scientist when it comes to hitting.
He's in another world. I mean, I've never quite run into anybody, you know, like him in my entire career in baseball. That is so, except maybe listening to Ted Williams in spring training when he was down there, you know, but JD is a different cat. I mean, you know, he talked about, you know, revamping his swing from his toe up, you know, and I can't even imagine going through that, you know, how you can have, and sometimes it might be a lot, you know, it might be a lot on his plate, but that's what he does. You know, that's what he's done for the last number of years and it's worked successfully for him. I would expect he comes back, has a very big year for the Red Sox. I just don't see a repeat of last year by any shape or form.
You know, and he got off to a nice start at spring training. We talk about results not mattering. Does it matter maybe a little more when you're coming off a bad year to have some early success?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. You don't know, players will say, well, it's only, you know, we're only a week into games and I've got some stuff I've got to work on. They'll say that. But I'm telling you, there's not a player that takes that field, whether it be the first game of spring training or the final game of spring training or any game in the regular season, that doesn't want to do their very best. And then, you know, I listen to that all the time and I don't buy it. You know, well, we're only 7 days in and I've only had, you know, 15 at bats. And, you know, once I get to 30, you know, that's when I really start to get concerned about my swing and hope that it's on target. I think that's a bunch of baloney. And I don't know of any professional athlete that wants to put their feet on the field and not be as successful as possible every single time they go out there. You don't want to be embarrassed.
It's, you know, the guy I always think of when you say that, and it's not fair. You were his teammate. I wasn't here in that scenario, but Roger Clemens was always the king of, like, he'd have a bad outing at spring training and it would always be, you know, doesn't matter. I know what I'm doing. I'm getting in my work. It was always getting in my work.
Getting
but
in
then
my
guys,
work.
Guys would have a good outing in spring training. I feel good. I'm ready to go. This shows you that, you know, it doesn't go both ways.
Exactly. When I was getting in my work and it wasn't real good, it was crappy work. So, you know.
Hey, you know what I want? You know what I got thinking about before this is the lineup this year. And you know, it's kind of right-handed heavy again. They've gone back to that, right? Bradley and Benintendi are gone. So they've kind of swung back the other way a little bit. And I thought it was real interesting that they've had Kike Hernandez leading off a lot down in spring training. Because Verdugo was really good as a leadoff hitter last year, right? And I sort of assume coming into this season, Verdugo is going to be a leadoff hitter. That's one thing that worked last year. But then you've got Devers as a number two, and now you got lefty-lefty. and a whole bunch of righties, right? So it looks like he's at least going to play with Kike Hernandez in the leadoff spot. He said Verdugo would bat second. So now all of a sudden, I guess my question to you is, you've got Bogaerts has been a pretty good number three, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, how far back do you float Devers? You know what I mean? Is it after JD Martinez? Could he be a fifth hitter? Like, where do you see Devers? If you're knocking him out of the two hole, where does he bat in this lineup?
I think anywhere from one to five, you know, I think is a good spot for him. I really do. I'm not one to five, but, you know, two to five, I think is a good spot for him. I don't think it makes any difference where you hit him. And it doesn't matter to me either whether you're sitting against a right-hander or a left-hander. Sometimes I think too much is made of that. You know, we didn't think a whole lot about the right-left thing, you know. And I know it's difficult. I know it's good to set up bullpens and stuff like that. But the fact is that, you know, you put your best hitters up there. You put your best quality hitters up at the top of the lineup because you want them hitting as many times as possible in the course of a game. And that's basically how you do it. And I don't worry very much about back-to-back lefties facing a left-handed pitcher. I don't worry about it because Verdugo last year proved he could hit left-handers. You know, so it's not like, you know, you got some stiff up there that can't hit a left-hander leading off the game, and then he's followed maybe by Rafael Devers. He's not a stiff against left-handers. So, you know, I don't concern myself very much with that. I really don't. I just want my best guys in those top five or six spots so they can get more at-bats, you know, at least maybe one more at-bat a game than the rest of the guys, and that's how I'm going to score most of my runs.
I'll tell you this. If you're talking – Kike Hernandez had a nice spring. He's hitting the ball. So if you've got Hernandez, Verdugo, Bogaerts, Martinez, Devers, one through five, you're pretty good.
Oh, you're really good. They're going to score runs. You know, I tell everybody, I said, don't worry about the team on the field. They're going to score runs. I said, the whole thing with this ball club is going to be the pitching staff, and it's going to be the starting pitch. And I said, if that comes through, this team may surprise some people and get to the playoffs. If it doesn't come through, it's going to be pound baseball all year long. You know, it's going to be a lot of 10 to 8 games and stuff like that. And those you really don't want to see, obviously. You want to, you know, you want to see dominant pitching for your side. And I don't know if it's going to be dominant, but it's got to be, it's going to be 1,000% better than last year. And it's got a chance to be that, I think. So, you know, we'll see as time goes on. But I keep saying, you know, there's still not a lot of enthusiasm about it. And now I get it because we're up here, you know, and they don't pay a lot of attention to spring training. They really don't. And a lot of what people are thinking is what they've read all winter long, you know, about this team, how they're doing nothing. They're signing nobody and they don't get to see them develop down there in spring training and what kind of club they could possibly have when they get up here. So I keep saying, look, you know, this could be a very competitive ball club. This could be a club that has a chance to go to the playoffs. And excuse me, that's all you're looking for is a chance to go to the playoffs, and then anything can happen after that. So, you know, I think they're a little better than people think.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. In fact, I feel a little better about them, I think, almost each week as I start to watch them and lay this out. And I think the two things are, I've been saying all along, right, all due respect to the three guys because they're major leaguers, but Ryan Weber pitched game three, Josh Osich started game four, and Matt Hall started game five.
No, I mean,
essentially replacing that with Eduardo Rodriguez, Garrett Richards, Nick Pivetta. I mean, that's a different class completely. And that's with Tanner Houck in the wings, and that's with Chris Sale rehabbing, right? So
totally
starting pitching is going to be better. There's no doubt. The interesting thing to me, too, this year is the bullpen, right? I mean, last year you had Barnes out there, and Brazier had a great comeback year. But a lot of guys, you were sort of day-to-day. You didn't know who was going to do what. You didn't have Darwin's and Hernandez and Josh Taylor at the beginning, and Darwin's was never 100% coming back from the COVID. Now you got Adam Ottavino, who's a pro, 10 years. He's been very good, and I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. And Sawamura, the Japanese pitcher. Now, he threw a sim game, struck out three of the four batters he faced. This was interesting. It was, you know how it is down in spring training. Every now and then you stumble onto a backfield and all of a sudden the brass is all sitting there and everyone's paying attention to you. You're like, what's going on here? Well, that was the scene today, including, and this was pretty cool, Koji Uehara was there as a reporter from NHK television in Japan. He had come over.
He's going into our business, huh?
He's taking over our business, and he interviewed Sawamura after, but Sawamura spoke for a little bit. Let's hear a little bit of what he had to say after his outing.
And it's obviously different from bullpen session, you know, getting out there on the mound, facing batters. It got me fired up. So I think I did a pretty good job today.
And what about having Koji there watching you throw? How cool is that?
Obviously, Koji Uehara, I have a lot of respect for him. And we hang out on and off the field all the time. But, even if he was watching me in the dugout, it wasn't something that I was really paying attention to. I just focused on my pitching today.
You know, and so this guy, he's in his 30s. He's been 10 years in Japanese baseball. He's been very good. He's got to get used to the baseball. It's a different baseball. We've seen video of him sort of dealing with that. And the approach is slightly different. They kind of have a day off each week. But we've seen guys, especially in the bullpen, Jerry, we've seen guys come over here and have a lot of success when they're in their later years and their experience, like this guy is.
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to faze him. You know, he's been playing high-class baseball for a long time in Japan, and certainly coming here, Robert, now he's playing with the best in the world. But the fact is that, if he's got that kind of stuff, he's going to be fine. And, as you mentioned, Koji, he comes with high praise from Koji. So, that means a lot to me because, he's seen him pitch, obviously. He knows all about him. He knows he can get the job done. He probably wouldn't have recommended he come here if he didn't think he could get the job done. And so, it's going to be interesting to watch. And, I saw Bonds the other day against Atlanta. And, man, oh, my goodness, he had that fastball rolling. And he struck Acuna out. And it looked pretty impressive to me. So, I may be changing my feeling a little bit about him closing out the games. After seeing something like that, that was very impressive.
Well, it's a contract year for him, so it'll be interesting to see how he handles that. Every time you read about Matt Barnes now, part of it is this could be his last year with the Red Sox. Matt Barnes beginning what could be his final season with the Red Sox. So some guys deal with that well and motivate some guys. Other guys don't. He's off to a good start.
Depends how you get out of the gate. If you don't get out of the gate well, you're going to hear more and more and more of it. If he gets out of the gate well, he's going to hear less of it, and they're going to be calling for them to sign Matt Barnes. So, it's crazy how it works. And it is crazy how it works on your mind, too. I mean, there's no question about it. When you're in those positions like that, you're always thinking about, what are they going to say about me? You're almost afraid to pick up the paper or get on the computer the next day to see what they're going to say about you, So getting off to a good start is not only important for Matt Barnes, it's important for this whole ball club because, I was looking at the schedule the other day. They got a ton of games in April, and it's a lot of them are home games. So they got to get out of here, real quick out of the chute to play the good baseball very, very, very soon. They could get lost in the dust easy, after a month of the season.
All right, I want to touch on something you just said. Koji coming after our job. He's reporting now in Japan. I don't know if you saw this. Saturday, Lenny DiNardo and I did the game. It only lasted two innings. They rained it out. Nobody wanted me doing the game. And Alex Cora came on during the game and had a pretty funny exchange with Lenny. Because remember, Alex worked at ESPN before he got into coaching and managing. And so this was his take on former players becoming broadcasters.
Yeah, I want to go back to that conversation you and Lenny were having, guys who you could sort of tell were going to be managers. What about guys who you knew were going to be broadcasters? Like, a guy like Lenny DiNardo, good-looking guy, right? Chiseled upper body as a player. Like, you knew he was going to be on TV someday, didn't you?
Yeah, it's kind of like Brock Holt. I do believe Brock is going to be a star on TV. You guys make a lot of money. I mean, it's I lived it. I mean, 60 days a year, and the type of money you're making, that's amazing, bro. I mean, if you're smart, right, why you want to be a manager? Like the grind of being a manager and all this stuff, whatever, when you were just working 60 days a year, that was me. I don't even know what I was thinking, but I know Lenny's good, and he was a great teammate. Very likable, and I'm glad that he's working for NESN and he's doing a good job for us.
I'm going to go on record right now and say I was not most likely to be an analyst, color commentary guy when I was playing TCS stories.
It's easy, right? I mean, it's not easy in the beginning, but then you get it.
All right, Jerry, I think you got to step up here. He says it's easy, it's big money, first of all, he was talking about doing 60 games, and that is what most of the guys do. You, on the other hand, you've been a grinder and do it all, but I'll give you a chance here to be the counterpoint to Alex Cora saying it's an easy job with big money and everybody can do it.
Alex ought to worry about managing the Red Sox. So he really should, you know, because yes, he's had a taste of both worlds. And I will say this about this world. The game doesn't stick with you like it does as a manager or as a player. You go home at night after, you know, a loss, being a manager or a player, and it's difficult. It's hard to sleep. A bad night, you go 0-5, you know, it's tough. You know, as a broadcaster, you know, you hope you have a good game. You might flub up a couple of times, but, you know, you get over it. You come back the next day and you're ready to go. And the money part of it, I'm not quite sure where he's coming from on that. You know, that's reaching a little bit. Now, ESPN must really, really pay well. And I'm not so sure that's the case. So, you know, I don't know what he's talking about there, but let's put it this way. We're both happy where we are. I'm happy with what I'm doing. I have no stress. And he's happy doing what he's doing. Matter of fact, he's very happy doing what he's doing.
I think you're both in the right place. I said to Lenny, I don't know about the big money, but I will say for the guys who work 50, 60 games, the money per amount of work isn't bad. You know, you're not going to get rich doing 60 games, but 60 games isn't a ton. Like you and I do, you know, 100 plus every year. You do 150 games, you're wiped out at the end of the year. Get that nice little, I'll do this series, I'll take that series off. It's not a bad gig.
That's what our business is coming to. That's exactly what our business is coming to. It's going to be a day not too far away where you're going to have 7 analysts per team because nobody's going to want to do more than 30 games. You know, they don't have to financially. They don't have to do it. They're going to say, guys aren't going to want to travel. They're going to want to watch their kids grow up, right? There'll be 7 guys fighting for like 60 home games. You know, it's going to be crazy. So
everybody gets 10 games.
Yeah. The whole business is changing. You know, it's not going to be, you know, the days of, you know, me doing 162 games. I mean, I think they're gone for a lot of people because it's just not going to happen. They're not going to want to do that, you know? So, and I got to tell you, after all the years of doing him, I don't blame him because when I started to take a cut in some of the games, I felt more refreshed as the year went on.
Right. You know, it's funny. He mentioned Brock Holt. It's funny. People for a couple of years now have been talking about Brock Holt as being a guy who can do this someday. I was just thinking like, nobody was walking around saying, you know, that Jerry Remy, he's going to be a hell of a broadcaster someday when you were playing.
No, not even Jerry Remy.
Right? Sometimes
he still doesn't think that way.
Well, people have come around to figure that out. But it's funny. You know, I've talked to guys, and you and I have talked about it. Like, nobody thought, Jim Rice. Nobody thought Jim Rice was going to be an analyst.
Sometimes, right, exactly, you know, exactly.
Sometimes the guys get a chance and you have fun with it and make the most of it.
Yeah, and you know, once you get it down, and I'm not sure you ever get it down, but once you get a routine, you know, it's a great way to make a living. It really is. And you don't have that stress, you know, that stress that you have as a ball player. But, you know, everybody's going to be a broadcaster when they get it. Everybody now, when he's done, he's going to be in the booth. What makes you think this guy wants to be in the booth? You know,
yeah.
What makes you think this guy's going to want to do 80 games a year? They don't, you know, that's a lot of games. And I don't think they're going to want to do that. So I don't know. As long as they wait a few more years, you know, let them stay out there and, you know, let them think about it. Just wait a few more years, you know, because I'm not quite finished yet.
There you go. You didn't make it through a pandemic to hang it up just yet. We're ready to go. All right, Rem. Good stuff as always. It was fun. And next week, I think next week, you know, you'll do a couple of games this week. Next week, we'll start taking a look at this roster, who makes it, who doesn't, where they go from here. But we're getting closer, buddy. Looking forward to it.
All right. Take care, TC.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it. That was Jerry Remy. I'm Tom Karen. This has been the TC and Jerry Podcast.